The Diamondbacks are the hottest team in Major League Baseball right now. Wes and I are going to talk about the Diamondbacks and some of their recent developments in the month of July and beyond on today's episode of the Snakes on the Diamond podcast. So, hello, everyone. Welcome back in. Last time we were here, we had Lindsey Crosby talk about the AJ Puck trade. We're going to talk about the trade deadline, Ketel Marte's MVP case, the Diamondbacks refusing to lose series all of a sudden, and I guess you can say an update on the most recent prospect to get called up to the major leagues, Adrian Del Castillo. So, Wes, excited for what's on the docket today?
Yeah, you know, actually, speaking of Adrian Del Castillo, I just got back from Reno, where I guess I saw his last weekend with the Aces. So that was kind of cool. You can check out my review of Greater Nevada Field over on azsnakebit.com. I enjoy it. I recommend it. If you have the money to go visit and you're down here, if you have the money to visit Reno or Lake Tahoe and you're a Diamondbacks fan, I would definitely recommend it. There's lots to do besides baseball. But no, I saw him in person, and I think he's a better catcher than I just like from watching him. I don't see the defensive issues as much as, you know, like they look like out there on paper. I wasn't really as much paying attention to him on the field, but I did see him, you know, catch a few pitchers and, make some play appearances. And he looks ready to me. I don't know about his defense, but it's kind of out of obligation. If we want to go over that, like the circumstances that led to his sudden calling up, because I don't think anyone really expected to see him in the major league this year.
Yeah, the situation that put Del Castillo up in the major leagues, Gabriel Moreno suffered a groin strain Monday against the Cleveland Guardians. He'll be out. There's no timetable for when he's out. They didn't give the severity. We'll look it up real quick. But I assume he'll be back before the postseason. I'm not 100% sure on that. If anything less than a grade 3 strain, there's...
Yeah, if it was very serious, we'd already know this. We wouldn't have to look this up. I think that should be, if you're not super into baseball, if things like that's kind of in the air, it's either there's questions about the medical, which I think they've got them all in. We've heard something that was serious. I'm assuming it's probably like a grade 2 or grade 3 strain.
No, I don't think so. But
I don't know, is it worse or is it better?
I mean, they're going to miss his defense. This is true for both Moreno and Walker. I think they're going to miss their defense much more than they're going to miss their bats, because it's no different than they would be slumping offensively, in my opinion.
Let's be clear here. I mean, I don't think Adrian Del Castillo is going to be like at all really filling Moreno's shoes that well. I think offensively, he has, you know, he's definitely got like the EV velocity. Exit velocity and you know, batting data suggests that he certainly should be able to hold his own major league pitching, and he hits the shit out of the ball. So I don't really have concerns about that. And he looked good at the plate. Defensively, I didn't see any major framing errors, pass balls, anything like that. But then again, like I said, I was more paying attention to the field at the time while I was in Greater Nevada Field. But I mean, like, he passed the eye test for me. Like, he should certainly be a capable fill-in for a few weeks.
Yeah, the main thing you worry about is going from Reno to the major leagues. There's a concern about adjusting the pitches, because they'll actually the breaking stuff will actually break at the major league level, which is why it was important for him to significantly cut down his strikeout rate with Reno this year. So last year, in 100.
I was going to say, it's probably fortunate that his last week has been spent in Sacramento, which is closer to sea level than as opposed to Reno.
It's closer to sea level than Chase Field and 90% of the major league ballparks. But last year in Reno, he almost had a 30% strikeout rate, but this year it's almost cut in half. It's down to 17% in the strikeout rate. So we saw it. So that's a significant cut on the strikeout rate at the same time, while not sacrificing walks. Just from 12% to 11%. That's, I think, the biggest thing from Del Castillo's thing is improvement is the ability to do more damage. Obviously, we see with the batting numbers, but also improve the plate discipline and being much more selective in the selective aggressive, I think, is the approach we're talking about here, where he's going after certain pitches and he's not missing them.
I mean, to add to that, I think it's really important to note that, like, if you look at his numbers, like, you know, from year to year, they've improved. Okay. Like, it's across the board, although, of course, we're factoring in, like, he did have a broken hand his first whole season. So that obviously brought down his numbers. But, like, I mean, if you look at the overall metrics relative to, you know, this year to last year to the year prior, they're all trending in the right direction. He's getting better as time goes on. Like, this is exactly what you want to see, you know, in a hitting prospect. Not to mention, your interview was very enlightening with the fact that he wants to be a catcher. He likes donning the dual ignorance. Like, that says a lot to, you know, just in terms of where his head's at as a prospect. And catching prospects there, I mean, it sounds to me more like he's more focused on the catching side of his game at this point than actually hitting.
And then the way I see it, obviously, with him, he's a left-hand bat that should be able to hit right-hand pitching. Makes him a perfect complement to Moreno long-term behind the plate. Although I still think there are going to be some defensive limitations. He has a below-average arm.
Yeah.
And that's reflective in the stolen base numbers against him. I'm just going to pull them up real quickly. Caught stealing rate.
He did have one.
His caught stealing rate in Reno was 21%. So 19 of 90. As we know, the Diamondbacks have greatly benefited from Gabriel Moreno saying, "Thou shall not steal." And if he does, I turn it into a meme. If he does catch somebody. But that's the thing Diamondback's going to miss the most.
That's the one area I think he absolutely is going to get stepped down. His arm strength is not nearly that of Gabby's. I can't remember in the one, I'd have to look through the box scores and see what exactly happened. I know there was a stolen base attempt, but I can't remember who was doing what. It was actually like basically a hitless game for most of the game on Saturday. But I mean, I think he's a capable fill-in. I'm not really worried about the defense right now. I mean, we don't want to see the step down. It's Jose Herrera and like whatever we can find right now to fill in. And when you already have Walker missing from the lineup, like it's a step down.
Yeah, because if we compare we can only compare the caught stealing rate with those two, but Herrera did pretty well. Yeah, he did pretty well last year. His stolen base numbers are pretty awful this year, but three of those stolen bases are Zach Gallen's fault.
Yeah.
Like year one, Herrera caught 12 of 28. That's a very good percentage. Year two, 6 of 21, which is about average. Oh, sorry, 6 of 27, which is about average. This year, he's 0 of 7, but again, the last three stolen bases to his name are literally not his fault. Herrera's good at getting the ball down to second base. His pop time's above average. The arm strength is good. I'd say more like a 55 arm than Moreno's plus 60 arm. And we're kind of ranks in that 40-45 range in comparison.
Yeah, it's a step down for both, actually. I agree with you there. I don't have super high expectations for, you know, him, you know. You know, I don't think he's going to hit the ground running. They kind of need him to, let's be real. The Diamondbacks have been able to kind of turn to, I mean, they've had a remarkable month of July. The real concern now is like the offense taking a step back. You're missing two of the key role players. And you have this rookie coming in to, you know, hopefully step up and kind of, you know, provide the relief that they need. It's a tall order for, you know, a young guy. I mean, I think he's mentally capable, but it's one of those things we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. And it's not like a Jordan Lawler situation where it's like, you hope he does it. He'll have plenty of opportunities in my opinion for the 8 weeks. I think at worst, he's going to be catching half the games.
Yeah.
And that's the only way he's going to get his lineup is as a catcher because, well, frankly, their DH is on a hot streak. And every time he seems to come up in a big situation, he homers.
Yeah, that's it's been remarkable this last we can talk about that, like into that is this last month, the turnaround. I think Jock actually, he's been, I assume you're referring to Jock, so we're talking about DHs. He's absolutely been one of the best signings Hayden's made, in my opinion.
Yeah. $12.5 million. And he's putting up, well, it's obviously matchup based, but it's been a huge plus on that side of the matchup. Like you look at a 159 WRC plus almost exclusively against right hand pitching.
Yeah, I mean that.
Wait, no, where was that? Yeah, I think that's what it was, but I'll double check. What Fangraphs is for.
But yeah.
The fact that Jock Peterson has been basically a right hand pitching killer. And it feels like anytime he's up in a big situation, you feel good about the Diamondbacks' chances of doing something in that inning.
I mean, he had two go-ahead home runs late in the game, the last two games. I don't know what, but it's just one of those things. Like, Jock, I think, has erased all those years of trauma that he inflicted as a Giant. And I think Diamondbacks have long since forgiven him after the year he's having with the D-backs. I was saying, like, that's one of the key drivers of the winning July. I mean, not to mention Ketel Marte has I'd say gotten better since we last talked about him.
Yeah, I say the thing about Jock is if you look at his numbers the last 2 years, I think he was better than the numbers he put up in 23, but maybe not as good as the numbers as he is in 24, although his 24 X stats are better than 23. But I would have taken the 23X stats player too.
I think he just wasn't motivated with, not being with, really competitive club.
The Giants team that can't figure out if they want to be good or not.
Yeah. He wants to be in a team that wants to win, that is good. That's like, I mean, he definitely the player who feeds off the players around him in terms of their emotions and like their, that team energy and chemistry. I have to give credit to Hazen for recognizing him as a good fit for the team because he's been everything that we and then some of what we expected him to be.
Yeah, for what it's worth, the last two times he actually had a legitimate chance to compete for a title, his team won the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
Even if we don't view the Dodgers 2020 ring as legitimate. You still had the Braves in the following season.
It's one of those things where, I'll let historians argue about that one. I mean, it's 60 games. It's going to be, there's always going to be an asterisk next to it. Are there asterisks next to other shortened seasons? Not necessarily.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
A lot
of people aren't going to in the case of the Dodgers, it's like, every person, every fan of the NL West teams aside from LA are going to put an asterisk next to it.
I mean, the real things that I question 2020 season, not to be completely off topic, are like the actual like individual awards, like MVP, Cy Young, Bauer, all those. They definitely are fake awards. 60 games is not enough to actually determine a player's value. A player can be on a crazy hot streak and then just be awful the rest of their career. And if you're only looking at those 60 games, he's Barry Bonds. The rest of the year, he's I'm trying to think of a terrible outfielder. I don't know. Scott Harrison. Okay.
You might want to go lower than Scott Harrison.
He ended up becoming a decent player for a bit.
There we go.
Luis Torero. There we go. There's a Marcier one. Yes, Harrison, has a long line of baseball players in his family, so I shouldn't knock him. But yeah, Luis Torero, someone like that. Small sample sizes. That's where I have a problem with it. 60 games is enough to kind of figure out which team is the best, not necessarily which, player's performance is actually real, in my opinion. Aside from Jock Peterson, who do you think else has been like a key component of this winning July and like them turning around? They're only five games out from the Dodgers, I think is what you said, or was it the Padres?
Yeah, they're both the Padres and the Dodgers are five games out from the Padres and Diamondbacks are five games out from the Dodgers for the NL West lead. Now, obviously, they're tied. I think it's I'm not sure what San Diego's doing today, but
it's like a half game, something like that.
But like I said, the face of the Diamondbacks' resurgence in July has been Eugenio Suarez, where he had such a good month. He went from being absolutely terrible to okay. This is exactly what we expect. The season numbers are exactly what we expected. Whereas,
that's
how we got there. So bizarre.
Because we
saved a season one month.
not too long ago, we were looking at it as a failed signing. Actually, one of our mutual friends was saying, like, you know, all actually, I had even said all the hitter signings were bad, and I actually forgot about Jock Peterson, but and Grisha to some extent. But yeah, no, it's one of those things that he was the one real questionable move, like even like a month ago, as far as hitters go. And yeah, he turned around in a month, which tells you how hot a season it is. Like, it's exactly where you expect him to be. So, I mean, that's like I said, Patel earlier. I mean, he's taken it to the next level in terms of hitting, which is like, that says a lot. He's already an MVP contender.
I mean, the thing about Marte is you knew he had that. You always felt like he had that extra gear if he was motivated to get there.
It's a matter of you put it together all in one season. And this is finally, like, you can see it where, like, the defense has clicked. The offense has clicked. The base running has clicked. He's healthy. Knock on wood. And the team chemistry around him, like, he's another guy that, like, very much. This clubhouse actually seems to be filled with a lot of guys that kind of feed off each other's energy. And Cattell very much is one of those guys.
I think one of the things with Marte is, like, there's certain players you feel like they want to be the best player that – best player in the game, yeah. But very few have the talent to do that. Cattell Marte is one of the few players that has the talent to do that.
Yeah, he does. He actually really, he does. And it's
he's one of those guys. Like, he wants everything. He wants the spotlight. He wants to be the guy. Yeah. And he's had moments with this team where he was the guy. That's the Phillies. That's the Phillies. It's like, it'd be a good idea if you're anyone watching this and it's like you're going to the game against Philadelphia, get those MVP chants working just to troll the Phillies. If not troll the Phillies, just state your opinion who should be the 2024 National League MVP. And I think it's a much closer race. What do you think? As we shift into that topic.
It's one of those things that, he's finally put it all together. It's really, this was the question of when, like I said. I think we have to look at the pitching. I think some of these moves recently from the deadline, I think it contributed lately, but, I'm trying to think of, like, what other, like, who else has really been, like, one of the key components of the winning July?
Well, I mean, it's a lineup. I mean, you talk about a lineup that's got a 134 WRC plus as a team.
Yeah, that'll do it.
That's how they won in July, despite the fact Paul Sewald was not good. It has been deposed as the closer.
If we had someone else's closer, that would have gone away. Actually, you want to feel really bad. The White Sox have had more blown saves than wins.
I feel like the D-backs are close.
At least we're not in that situation, okay? That's all I got to say. The bullpen kind of being resituated towards the end, I think, has given a little more momentum. Obviously, you can't really say the starting pitching has been, like, one of the key.
Well, I mean, if your starting pitching is bad, you still got 9 innings to score runs. Yeah. That's the Nationals learned the hard way. You still play for 27 outs.
So the Diamondbacks, I think, like, you know, like, they kind of looked like they were out of it not even like a month ago. Like, it was one of those things that were, it was kind of foregone conclusion that they could sellers. So this is just one of those years that they should write off. The Texas Rangers are also somehow back kind of in it, hanging around still a few games back in the AL West. Like, both the NL West and AL West seem pretty winnable. Just kind of tie those two together.
I'll be honest, the only reason the Dodgers are ahead is because they bank so many wins early in the year.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure who the best team in that division is. I think you could make an argument for three teams. Yeah. It's worse than last year, too.
I mean, the Padres are, they have a good all around team, but there's no offensive standout performer like a Cattell Marte or, you know, a Tani DHing. It's really. And then, not to mention, the Dodgers have also had some tragedy. You know, Freddie Freeman's son was sick, in the hospital. He's hospitalized.
No, he's already back.
He's back in the hospital.
Guillain-Barré syndrome?
Yeah, Guillain-Barré. It's a neurological disorder that can cause deafness.
Yeah, Freeman was back. Really, Freeman really returned yesterday. Tough. So,
he was out. He's It's not an injury, but he's still out for, you know, he's a key contributor who was out. So that's contributed to that. I think Freddie Freeman will be Freddie Freeman the rest of the year. It's one of those things that the Dodgers had a lot of things like that come up this year. That, you know, they're not running away with the division like they did last year.
I mean, if you're talking about a standout offensive performer for the Padres, it's been Jerkson Profar.
Yeah, other than him. But even then, if you look at his, you know, like what's his F4 total?
3.6.
Okay, compared to over D-backs. Over, I'm just saying, Ketel Marte is over 5, so is Otani. That was my point with that. So they don't have a 5-war player. They don't have a 5-war player on their team, and that's really was my only point.
Well, to be fair, there's only 5-4 war F. I think there's only 4 or 5 F4 players in the league.
Okay, yeah, you know what? Still, my point still applies. Okay, the Diamondbacks have a really great, you know, what's crazy is somehow Bobby Witt's over there, just like, you know, and for the Royals, like he's pushed like it's like 7.5 WAR or something like that. He has 50% more WAR than Ketel, which is crazy impressive. Not to get off topic, I just think that it's like,
yeah, the American League MVP race is insane.
Yeah, that's going to be a discussion we're going to have to dedicate to a video just on that, because it really actually is one of the craziest MVP races I've ever seen in the AL.
Look, Aaron Judge is putting up historic offensive numbers, but he might not win the MVP. Yeah. That's how good Bobby Witt Jr. is.
A 40-40. Yeah, I mean, Bobby Witt's looking like a 40-40 season, probably. Okay, from a shortstop, he's playing gold bunnies.
I don't think the home runs will catch up.
Okay, 30-40. Maybe 30-50. I think he's still going to have, you know, very solid, yeah. You know, either way, it's crazy numbers for a shortstop. That, I mean, it's probably one of the best shortstop seasons by a non-performance-enhancing using player. I mean, it's like basically A-Rod seasons.
Is this Cal Ripken?
Yeah, Cal Ripken. Although, I mean, even then, I mean, we're talking about, if you take out everyone from the steroid era, you have to go back to players that played at the turn of the 20th century. So yeah, like, yeah, that's the thing. And for a guy that young, it's really, he's stand out. Definitely. I mean, you're lucky to be in that position. I think, as a Diamondback fan, I'm pretty jealous. My friend, is a Royals fan, and he's been very, very happy with Bobby Witt. Cause he's, I mean, it's all around improvement.
Yeah. And the Royals did the smart thing and locked him up before the season. In fact, I think that was probably why he took off this year. Some people, it's like when they don't have to worry about money, it's like, oh, good, I can focus on baseball since I'm taking care of for the next however long my career is going to be.
Oh, yeah. I think
like Bobby Witt Jr.'s not putting on another team's uniform.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's one of those things. And he's really well liked there. Hopefully.
I think he's just well liked.
You know, that was the idea with Corbin Carroll. Hopefully, Corbin, he's also looking more like Corbin again.
The average isn't going to recover, but. There was a stretch where he was like on base machine.
I mean, he's showing a little bit more pop, and he's being on base.
On base machine, and then he followed up. Well, he's not getting hits, but he's hitting homers. His hits are basically homers after that. That's where it's been.
Yeah, I mean, he's not just an outright net negative at this point again, and it seems like Jake McCarthy. I think I'm gonna give him credit for like kind of the.
I don't know how
stepping off defensively. Where other, I don't. McCarthy's stayed hot so far, you know, in the big leagues.
Has he cooled off at all this season? We're talking about Jake McCarthy.
He has.
It's amazing how
Jake McCarthy.
He's like a walking 2 for 5.
And said, "Jake, your hair is on fire. If you do not hit or steal a base, you will be so burst into flames." That's why he always is running around like he's just like, you know, on fire. So
Jake McCarthy's literally walking 2 for 5.
Keep going to that hypnotism. Pitching. Cause it's working. The hypnotism is working.
Jake.
So, I mean, we kind of talked about like, you know, obviously the NL West is pretty much down to the Dodgers, the Padres, the Diamondbacks. I don't think the Giants are in here, or the Padres or the Rockies rather. The wild card. Where are the Diamondbacks in relation to that?
Oh, I'll have to double check that, but Diamondbacks did get some help again. I think the Braves got beat up pretty bad by the pot. Yeah, the Braves got beat up pretty bad by Milwaukee. So like I said, the Braves have come down to earth. So now I think the Braves are in pretty bad shape as a team. So their health is going to determine if they make the postseason or not. Their team is very beat up. They just lost Lopez to I think it's going to be a pretty short term injury, but basically he's on the IL for essentially rest. The Padres and Diamondbacks just don't lose series anymore.
Yeah, there's not really much to say about that other than that they just are miraculously winning series after series and really have just been kind of gaining ground on it. I think they're actually better winning right now. It's looking better.
And Philadelphia is 10 outs away from snapping. No, not 10 outs, sorry. The Phillies are 7 outs away from snapping the Dodgers 3-game win streak.
Come on, Phillies. But you know what?
You want them to get cold.
Where are they in the wild card standings? I have no idea.
They're holding the second wild card spot, and since they didn't, and due to acts of God, they are going to hold the second wild card spot.
Okay, so right now, the Diamondbacks are a postseason team. That's really the important take on there.
Yep. And it feels like they're going to stay. Especially if they figure out the ninth inning thing, and then they're going to go on a run, my opinion.
Oh, I agree. That's been the biggest issue by far, has been just not really having a closer. Justin Martinez looked great the other night, but Justin Martinez, when he's on, he looks great. It's just when those times when he's off that he's just not great at all.
When he's on, he's very on. When he's off, he's very off.
Yeah.
That's basically how you describe him. And unfortunately for the Diamondbacks, it seems like Jerickson knows where the switch is.
It seems like he finally figured this out.
There's the oblique. It's gonna be a running joke, but the obligatory Justin calm down mound visit.
Oh yes.
Yeah, if it takes a mound visit to make Justin Martinez be an effective closer, then Brett Strom can hold the phone for one inning.
I'm fine with that. I think most D-backs fans and pretty much anyone would be fine with that.
That's it'd be less bad in extra innings because you get an extra mound visit anyway per inning.
Yeah. I mean, he's so young that, the sky's the limit as long as he stays healthy. So, I'm hoping that that's the solution at closer. I don't think necessarily Ryan Thompson, AJ Puck, or what's his name? Drawing a blank on the guy.
The thing about Ginkle and Puck is kind of like the same way you view Brad Ziegler. Yes, they can close, but you don't want them to. It's not their best role. If you make AJ Puck closer, it almost kind of defeats the purpose of using him, for him in the first place.
All the other acquisitions, they're not really closer arms. They're much better in the relief setup role. If you're turning to them, it does defeat the purpose.
I mean, if Justin Martinez steps up to be a closer, that's fine.
Yeah.
I feel like this is our second best option now. Martinez is closer. You put Seawald in there as a setup man, or maybe a medium middle reliever, and you got plenty of guys who can pitch the seventh inning. Problem is, you're not confident in your ninth inning options.
Yeah, that is kind of a problem. I think he seems like he's kind of building the momentum, the confidence that he needs to stay at closer. It does seem like he's much more dominant with each successful outing, and it seems like that momentum's carrying so far. I would not be surprised if he runs away with the closer job.
Yeah, I feel like a year from now we'll be addressing Justin Martinez as All-Star D-backs All-Star closer Justin Martinez.
Yeah, I would take that bet. I agree with you. That seems like a possibility next year, and a very good possibility.
He might be an all-star anyway.
Yeah. I think we've broken down most of the major topics for the D-backs. I mean, we could talk about how horrible the White Sox are. So, the White Sox have
is the streak over?
Won on a Monday.
Oh, the streak is over.
The streak is over.
Oh my God, there's still 60 games under 500. Fire everything.
No. Yeah, that's an embarrassment. I don't get why like that is just baffling. Like every single thing. I mean, how many things had to go wrong? How many bad decisions did the White Sox organization have to make? How many bad signings and injuries did they have to like be that? And this is historically bad. Okay. It's not quite Cleveland Spiders bad, but it's like up there with the 62 Mets, with the 2003 Tigers, with the Diamondbacks, you know, recently in their two bad seasons. They're probably worse than the 04 season for sure. I think they're almost,
it's definitely worse like than 04.
Very well. They very likely could lose 120 plus games, which is that's an achievement.
Yeah, I was gonna say I feel like the White Sox have you look at that White Sox in the last 2 to 3 years. That's like a special level of incompetency, in my opinion. In a case where you make so many bad decisions, yeah, and a lot of more bad decisions. Well, not necessarily bad decisions, but decisions that don't work out. Like I view Montgomery as a decision that didn't work out, not necessarily a bad decision.
No, yeah, no, not bad. I mean, some of them, they're kind of like, if you're looking at them, it's a hindsight kind of thing. Like, okay, you could have gone after a different starter, reliever, whatever, you know, signing you're looking at. And the Diamondbacks cases, most of them are just like, that's bad fucking luck. With the White Montgomery Sox, was the best
pitcher on the market when they signed
Jeff Passan had a tweet from 2020 where he's like, they have all these players under control, blah, 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 blah. And it's like they're either not with the team, they're injured, or no one learning baseball.
See my tweet about the 2014 Orioles farm system?
No.
All these good players, and they didn't do anything for them.
Oh, yeah. The Orioles.
These are guys that are playing on good teams.
The funny thing with the Orioles is, like, they, you know, like they had repeatedly high draft picks. Like, it wasn't like a. Like they didn't. It's just they were horrible with their drafting. It's like only like relatively recently that they managed to put like the monster of a system that they have now.
Were they really that bad at drafting? I mean, they drafted borderline all-star level players. I mentioned you got Kevin Gausman, Christian Walker.
Yeah. Jonathan Scope. It's not like that they were. It's not that they're drafting with
Hunter
that.
Harvey.
Their player development on. Very bad. Christian Walker should have been given a chance. They should never acquired Chris Davis. Like, I mean, you go down the list of
It was the extension.
You know what I'm saying. Like, I mean, course, okay, you don't extend Chris Davis. You don't do all these, you know, XYZ moves, and it would have worked out a lot better. But the Orioles ownership towards the end was of the Angelo Peter Angelo's life was really not great situation. I know that there was. I mean, if you really want to know, I'll spill some quick tea. There were some struggles behind the scenes over control over day-to-day operations.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that.
Those are well documented. It went to court.
Yeah, I mean, there's like very public stuff. There's some other stuff that was going on. I don't know if it's public or not. It went to court.
The lawsuit got thrown out, though.
But here's the thing, is like they sorted those problems out. They developed a really, I mean, there's a proof that any organization can turn these things around. There's no reason why the White Sox can't turn this around. There's no reason why the Rockies can't turn their shit around. There's no reason the A's are the A's. They deserve their ownership deserves to burn in the fiery pits of hell. But that's just me. Any other organization should be able to turn it around. Like it's not really a question to me. Like it's embarrassing that a team could be this bad.
Like, to be fair, I'm not assigning blame to Chris. I'm not assigning most of this bad stuff happened before Chris made a single move.
I put it on Jerry Reinsdorf, on Tony La Russa, on, you know, everyone else in the organization.
I mean, Tony wasn't making too many decisions.
I know there was some involvement. I know he did have some level of involvement in some of the personnel decisions. I do think he deserves some blame. Other people in the organization are necessarily with him now. They are very much to blame for this. I mean, they've lost 100 more games than they've won in his career, in Chris Guest's career. That's baffling bad. Like anyone else, I think would probably be fired at this point. I mean, this is beyond futility. So
this is your one for him, for what it's worth. They were headed for rock bottom with or without him.
Yeah, that's true. It's going to be the question of how long do they hold on to it, and if they make any real changes afterwards.
Yeah. The White Sox just look like a very disinterested team. Like, see daily highlights of them doing, like, they just look like a team that doesn't care.
You know, I've seen Dominic Fletcher in his body language. His body language looks completely different than when he's with the Beanbacks in spring training. He looks dejected. He looks like he doesn't want to be there. He looks like he's not having fun, and I don't think he is either.
And you'll never see that type of stuff under Troy Lovello as manager of the Diamondbacks, because he does not tolerate that stuff. And that's why...
You have to give Torrey credit for that, because they've gone from an organization that was very, very bad, okay? And some of these guys have been through, like, Cal Marte has been through those bad years. You know, so...
And contributed to them sometimes.
And it contributed to them. A lot of these, some of these players have, and it's one of those things that you have to give credit to Torrey and, you know, Hazen and the ownership, okay? They fixed those problems. The Diamondbacks are... They're contending. They've made moves. They're spending money, and they're making... Yeah, some of them don't work out, okay? So for every Jordan Montgomery move, you have a Jock Peterson move. I mean,
yeah.
The White Sox go ahead and do that this year. It's just, it's all a shit show.
Like, if you talk about Kendrick and what he's done lately, he's gotten out of the way, which has always been the biggest problem under him. He's getting in the way of his team from doing anything. And when he said he would spend after the D-backs went on postseason run, where they got $100 million more than they expected, they did. And we talked about this long back in February.
Credit where credit's due, and he's continued to do it. Like, he's open for a strength at the deadline. I'm actually kind of impressed by I'm continually impressed by Kenny. You know, I don't know how much he pays attention to the media, but like, that's definitely something that I think needs to be mentioned. That, like, more. I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but continuing with that, okay? Like, it's one thing to make some kind of pittance kind of moves, you know, in the off season to make fans happy, but to continue investing, you know, and make moves when you need to, that's a lot to me.
I think there's
E-Rod is the only other topic that we need to bring up. By the way, speaking of signings that might not work out,
Go ahead, finish your question.
His first start's coming up, right? His first of the year. Or did it already happen? I've been out of town. So.
And an ironic twist of fate, his first start with the Diamondbacks got pushed back basically 24 hours.
That's funny. That is very funny. But he'll finally be pitching, hopefully, that.
I'm still hungry of AC Snake Pit for that joke.
Yeah.
I can't do it in my game story, but I can say it on my podcast.
So E-Rod, I think, you know, like, that's a that hopefully will bolster, you know, the team's momentum. They get better to catch up the Dodgers. I'd almost prefer winning the division this year. I think that's something that the D-backs need to do. And this is probably the best chance of winning this year.
My biggest worry about the Diamondbacks, if they do win the division, is if they win the division, they're gonna be a very hot baseball team going into October. If they win the division, they're down for 4 days.
I mean, we've talked about that. I do have a concern with that. I just think
I'm okay with the Diamondbacks having to go through the wild card.
And the legitimacy, you know, to legitimize them. A lot of people, I don't think the Diamondbacks are going to be underestimated this year.
Yeah, they're not catching up. They're not sneaking on teams.
Yeah, they're not sneaking. People know the team's dangerous. I mean, unless they have another, like, slump where they fall, you know, ass backwards in the playoffs again, I don't think anyone's going to be taking them for granted. And I hopefully... You know, like, you know, E-Rod comes back and it starts good. I have very low expectations. I would assume you do too. If you go and you're listening to this and you have high expectations for Eduardo Rodriguez's first start, I highly suggest you lower them immediately.
You'll be lucky to get 5 innings out of him. That's my expectation. I'll take 4 good innings, though. I'd rather have high quality of innings versus volume. Like, Arizona's going to have 27 players for his first start. And if Brandon Pfaadt does Brandon Pfaadt things, or at least the good Brandon Pfaadt things, I don't want to have that. I don't want to see another glitch inning. He seems to have that one inning where just the game just loses control of the game for like 4 hitters. And next thing you know, they've put up a 3 spot on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I think the Diamondbacks absolutely need to be able to rely on more than just Brandon Pfaadt. I think it's not necessarily fair to him, really. We need some of these like veteran starters to step up and pitch like they, you know, they were expected to. Hopefully down the stretch that happens. Diamondbacks, you want to throw out there before we wrap it up?
No, I was going to say, the Diamondbacks can't afford for Pfaadt to have that glitch inning where a ball drops and then he throws four pitches out of the strike zone and then he grooves a sweeper and he gets smashed.
Yeah, that's why I call
the Brandon Pfaadt glitch inning.
That's the problem. Yeah, that's when Pfaadt's bat is when that happens. It's
looper, kind of walk, like, tape measure blast because he made a location mistake.
To his pitching style. Like it's almost intrinsic to that. Like where, you know, it's a simple mistake gets exacerbated by the long ball. And it unfortunately has been and probably always will be one of his biggest weaknesses as a pitcher is getting the long ball.
Yep. And that sweeper's in the middle of third of the strikes, and we're talking vertically here. Vertically.
Yeah.
When it's in the middle of third, so it's thigh to knee, the belt. When his sweeper's in there, that's when he gives up homers.
Ironically enough, it's
up at the top, and he doesn't give up homers, but that's because you're not expecting to pitch up there.
You know,
of course, they're swinging at it. They're going to swing over it.
I have not watched enough of Pfaadt's starts to necessarily notice where he's giving up home runs. Although
they're
the ones high up or hanging pitch or whatever. Usually, I just. At least the ones he's been bad in. Every time I've actually watched a Pfaadt start, he's been perfectly fine.
You can look up the home runs on Statcast search, and it'll give you a video of the play.
Oh yeah,
you watch. You can actually download it too.
Right about that.
You can actually download it.
Is that where people get those video clips from, Michael? I had no idea.
Well, most of the time they just tweet the video.
Oh yeah. I just see clips on Reddit of home runs and stuff like that, and that's one of those things. I'm like, where do they get these home runs from? These videos, I don't know how they do that, but I guess that's how they do it.
When I do it, you'll see Arizona Diamondbacks at the bottom usually, because then if you click on that, you go to the original video that the team posted.
Oh, okay.
But anyways, so going back to the top of the rotation, which pitcher are you more worried about holding up the rest of the way, Merrill Kelly or Eduardo Rodriguez?
Physically, I'm still very skeptical of Eduardo Rodriguez like pitching at all this year. I said it like last time. It's like I'll believe it when I see it. Merrill Kelly, I do have some real concerns about him. He's older. He hasn't quite felt, like seemed the same, you know, in his. His last, outings. I do think that they're, I'm worried about some decline going on. I don't think it's necessarily a problem, but health-wise, I'm just because Eduardo hasn't pitched at all this year, you got to go with him.
I feel like Merrill Kelly's injury is a lot more serious. Like, Terry's major muscle, I think, is much more concerning because it's much closer to the shoulder, the actual joint. Whereas Rodriguez's injury is more towards the back. Like the bottom where the shoulder hits the back because it's the lat tendon.
Yeah, I mean we're talking about the actual injury. Then I agree.
The lat
with
muscle.
Merrill Kelly's injury is a more concerning one. But just if we're just looking at the actual like what's happened so far this year, it's kind of very obvious to look at Eduardo Rodriguez and have very pessimistic expectations of him staying healthy. I have concerns about Gallen staying healthy too, to be honest.
Well, I have more concerns.
I think Gallen is starting to lose a little tick off of. That's a whole other episode of us. If we're gonna break down what's going on with Gallen, it's gonna be a dedicated podcast episode.
Yeah, and my opinion on that is probably not safe for the regular, not probably, safe for while the D-backs still play baseball.
Yeah, we'll cover that in the off season. Yeah, I think as we covered, I mean, it's been a while since we've talked, so we've gone over a lot of topics. I just don't want to go too long on time.
We're at 45 minutes. So,
I mean, I don't have a whole other things other than to say, go check out Aces. Go check it out for your D-backs stream. Like, definitely, I was impressed. Yeah, had a wonderful time.
Make sure you go pricey, to the series against Philadelphia. In serenade Ketel Marte with MVP chance. Every time he bats, MVP. Because one, it rubs it in the Phillies' faces that Marte was the NLCS MVP. And two,
it
makes for a good moment. And I think Ketel loves those moments. If bases loaded and he's getting MVP Harper chance, he might hit a grand slam in the pool.
Harper's definitely not winning it. Like, at all. Like, it's
Harper's
not
even in discussion. I don't care what anyone says.
Not at all.
It's a two horse race, and if you want to put a third horse in the race, it's Francisco Lindor, in my opinion, who consistently remains underrated.
Perpetually underrated Francisco
he's
Lindor.
He was properly rated in Cleveland. He's underrated as a Met.
Oh yeah, this is one of those things. Like, he just stops the slow starts. That's all it is at this point.
Like, and of course, the New York media sucks. It's like
he's right. He's right behind Ketel.
Like, yeah, he's actually ahead of him in F4, but I averaged the two. So if you average the two, Ketel Marte and Shohei are the only two players with better than 5 WAR on both metric, both boards, both websites. That's basically it.
So. And you know, we're going to give it to Ketel because he's a D-back and he's not just a DH.
Yeah. I bet there are some players that won't give a DH the MVP.
Oh, I don't know many.
If it's close, I think you could see Ketel stealing some votes for sure.
DHs don't deserve to be MVPs, Dodgers fans. I'm looking at you.
Wait, Dodgers fans watch this podcast?
Maybe. Maybe they hate us. They hate watch us. I don't know. There's two people that just hate watch us and they're Dodgers fans.
All right. So on that light note, thank you everyone for watching. Make sure to please subscribe if you're listening in on your favorite podcasting platform. If you're watching us on YouTube, hit that subscribe, leave a like, and comment down below what you think of Adrian Del Castillo and his chances of solidifying the catcher position in the 8 weeks that Moreno's probably going to be out. We don't know this. I just took the midpoint between a grade one and a grade two strain, so 8 weeks would be the literal end of the season.
Leave a comment telling me how wrong I am. I would really love that. Just hate watch me. If you want to hate watch me, please hate watch me. Like and subscribe. Leave a comment. Thank you for watching, everyone. We'll see you soon.